Hello, you are about to hear a discussion with Emma Elizabeth Tillman, who was terrific, and we had a fantastic discussion. I really enjoyed it. I wanted to just touch on a couple things first. One thing is that I was recording due to scheduling. We recorded during a hurricane, Hurricane Florence. I'm sure you saw it in the news last week. The eye of the hurricane was actually really close to the house at that time. Pretty much the eye wall was moving in, so on my track, you're going to hear a little bit of rain. I tried to edit that out as much as possible, but yeah, it might be a little annoying at times. Maybe you know, more annoying for me to hear it, but I was safe the whole time. Just so happened that we had to record during a rainstorm, or a hurricane. And also, Emma is an artist. She's maybe not as familiar to our listener base. I think she's probably, she's done a little bit of work, and I think she has quite a career ahead of her as a photographer, filmmaker. I think she's pretty well established as a photographer, and I think she has some good projects ahead of her in film that I'm really looking forward to following as she develops in her career. And I, based on her film taste, I think, honestly, our community could really engage with her aesthetic. So she's also known for being the spouse of Father John Misty, who's also known by Josh Tillman, or Jay Tillman, as he's gone by, although he doesn't like to be called that anymore. Or he got tired of that, I should say. I'm a big fan of Misty, and subsequently Emma as well. They're kind of inexorably linked to each other, their work. He references her, and she references him, takes photos of him, and does his videos. So I think, just if you're not a fan of Father John Misty, I mean, this interview is, or this discussion is mostly about Emma. I'd say 90% about Emma, but of course, Josh Tillman comes up quite a bit, so you might not understand some of the references. I think I mentioned a couple song lyrics. I even got one of the titles of his songs wrong, just off the cuff. But I would actually recommend, if you have a chance, to maybe watch his videos. Total Entertainment Forever would be a good one to start with. Of course, Chateau Lobby Number 4, which we talk about a little bit here, and Emma directed that. Also, God's Favorite Customer, one of his later, most recent videos, she directed that as well. And I think I'll just like to say a little word about his, I guess, the themes of his work. They're pretty deep in a way. He talks about, I guess, about culture and how we consume things and how we are entertained. The Total Entertainment Forever is a good example of that. How we kind of are spoon-fed homogenized content, and I think, contrary to what Emma and I talk about with art house film and media, we're kind of I guess in a little bit of a bubble of entertainment, and that kind of shields us from what's going on throughout the world. So people are less active because they're subdued, I think, is maybe what Misty is getting at. He's also very introspective. He's very personal, and talks about Emma some in his work. He's also very cynical, very sarcastic. So I'd say that Emma has some of those characteristics. I think she's a lot of fun. She's very energetic, and I can see how the two personalities complement each other. Maybe, just from my take from talking to her, maybe not quite as cynical, but playful still. So anyway, if you haven't listened to Father John Misty, I would definitely recommend him. He's sort of, I guess, modern alt-rock, but with a little bit of a 70s influence. I see some John Lennon there, for sure, but and he's very deep, very intelligent, very witty, and I mentioned on the show, I'm about to see him in Charlotte next week. So yeah, without further ado, please listen to Emma Elizabeth Tillman talk about her awesome film taste, and I'll just spoil something towards the end of the episode. Josh Tillman got her one of the coolest birthday presents ever, so well done, Josh.
So I'm in I grew up in Santa Barbara, and I'm in my father's shop, taking this phone call because it's the only quiet, private place right now.
Shop as in like wood shop, or?
He's a sailmaker, so he has it's a loft, actually a sail loft. So
wow.
I'm surrounded by all of his sewing machines and sailcloth. And I see a sail here and a window cover. He's also loves things. So there's collections of cassette tapes and paintings on the walls. And
awesome.
Yeah, it's a really beautiful place, actually.
That is so cool, and so California too, a sail loft. So,
Yep.
well, I could make a comment about weddings and wedding dresses. I'm sure you get that all the time.
Sometimes.
So anyway, for people that don't know, you're Emma Elizabeth Tillman. You're an artist. I think that's just your general title. Is that accurate?
Yes, that's my favorite one. Yeah.
Filmmaker, photographer. Let's see. I guess author a little bit. And of course, you're married to Josh Tillman, who people might know as Father John Misty. So I think there's a little bit of, and I'm sure you'll talk about it, some creative overlap a little bit. I think it sounds like the two of you influence each other. That's cool that you're from California. I am as well, but a little further north, and I mentioned a sojourn into Hollywood. So you have an MFA from UCLA, which is actually, I looked it up, you're the second person that we've talked to that has an MFA from UCLA. The first was Alex Cox, actually. And I just dawned on me, he probably does a lot for the university, so yeah.
Oh, yes. He was like a big figure when I was going to school. It was, Coppola and Alex Cox and Alexander Payne. Those were the guys.
Yeah.
That everybody talked about.
Oh, that's right. Payne came from there as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Cox lives in, he's a super guy. I just heard from him the other day, but he's lives in a shack in Oregon. So you're.
Wow, really?
Yeah. It's kind of awesome, actually. It's very independent. But yeah, you're talking from a loft in Santa Barbara. So he's in a shack.
Yeah.
So just curious, Emma. What prompted you to go to film school? And I know I saw you had a literary degree, your undergrad. Have aspirations of becoming a P.T. Anderson, or what was going through did you want to marry a rock star?
Definitely neither of those, in fact. I always wrote stories when I was a child. From the time when I was probably 3 years old, I used to dictate stories and poems to my mom before I could write, and she has them still written down from her typewriter. And so I was always doing that when I was a child, and it was very natural for me to go to, I went to an independent school within the University of California, Santa Barbara, where I grew up in Santa Barbara, stayed home much longer than all of my friends. Everyone left and I was the only one that stayed, and pursued a degree. It's essentially in creative writing, but that school had no grades, no exams. You had to, if you took a class on Tolstoy, you had to read every single thing Tolstoy wrote within the semester. And it was a really amazing program. I loved it so much.
Huh.
And I thought I would be a writer, a novelist.
Really?
And my teachers wanted me to do that, the ones I was close with. And then I graduated from school and I thought that I would never go back to school ever. And I was very happy to be free of the educational system. And then I spent probably 2 or 3 years doing other things and not having nothing to do. I mean, as far as work, I was a waitress, and I don't remember where or when it was that I decided that I wanted to go to film school, but I had also always taken photographs.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And in some weird way, I guess I thought, oh, well, this is like the perfect way for me to marry two of these passions together. And so with no training whatsoever, I'd never made a film, I'd never been on a film set, I had no idea what I was doing. And I applied to NYU, USC, and UCLA, and my NYU application got lost in the mail.
Really?
And yeah, it was pre the full digital
Right.
You know, you could still send your application in the mail, and it got lost. And then I got into USC and UCLA, and chose UCLA because it was smaller, you know, and it was only 18 people in each class, which I thought was really nice.
I didn't know that. That's
And I
a
had, yeah, it's very small. It's so small. I mean, it's like I knew everyone in my program intimately, like, you know, the people that I, you know, the enemies and the friends and everyone you knew really well. But I didn't, they accepted me purely on my writing. And when I got into the school and was there the first week and they threw us right into the deep end, I had no idea that when you, I mean, I was 24 at the time, but I had no idea that when you made a film, you shot it from multiple angles, multiple times. That's how naive I
Yeah.
was.
Okay, well, 101, you probably got that out of the way. The whole idea of editing and weather and all that.
Exactly. So I was like, I mean, I knew nothing. So in a way, like, there was no, it was just sort of was like, it just happened, and it happened really naturally, and I understand it obviously much more now. But no, I never thought, oh, that's what I want to do, and like knew about it or had knowledge of it or, you know, anything like that. But I loved movies.
So you were a film person before you went there, or I you mentioned photography, but were you like a
Yeah,
film buff or just
no, I had I when I was young, my parents didn't let me watch any films that were for no particular reason, just they just didn't think it was good for my child brain, but I wasn't allowed to watch movies that had adult themes, right?
Oh, that
And
worked.
but my best, yeah, right. My best friend, what she grew up with a single mom who was pretty young. She was probably like in her 30s when we were probably 11 or 12. And she, they lived down the street from a video store, and she let us rent whatever we wanted. And we watched the most fucked up movies. We watched Kids like many times. So I got really into Larry Clark. We watched, you know, a lot of foreign films that had a lot of sex in them. We watched, you know, just really, we really went there. We really loved to watch these art house movies that we had no idea we were watching art house movies. We were just became fascinated by them. And that was sort of my, that's what I loved about movies was that was then. But I never was, I still am ignorant of so many wonderful filmmakers, but there have been a few that were introduced to me along the way, like Tony Gatliff.
Okay, I don't know Tony Gatliff.
Oh my God, Tony Gatliff is a brilliant French Moroccan filmmaker, and he makes movies about the marginalized people of Eastern Europe, so mostly gypsies and Romani people, and but nomads all around the world. He has a beautiful movie with Romain Duris in it, and it's set in Romania. It's about like an infiltrator into a gypsy community, and it's so beautiful. And anyway, these kind of obscure movies are like I love them, but then I don't have a context to put them in, you know? I just started learning about the classics in a way. But I also never saw the movies you're supposed to see, like Jurassic Park or
Oh, that's good.
Jaws or anything.
So you're watching
Yeah.
8 and a half and 400 Blows and obscure Roman. Well, I guess that was before the Romanian New Wave too. So that's I'll have to look up Tony
Yeah, he's
Gatliff.
great. Oh, he's so good.
Oh,
It's like a
he's
world
French.
opening up a world. He's French Moroccan, yeah.
Okay.
So he's like I think he started making films because he felt marginalized in France, you know, and then he saw the struggle of the Romani people, and he really connected with it and just has made so many films about gypsies. It's really amazing.
It kind of sounds like Abdelatef Kechiche, who's you probably know him for Blue is the Warmest Color. Speaking of
Yes.
sex and movies, but
Yes.
he kind of
Yes.
I think he I don't know I'm not sure if it's Moroccan or some other some sort of Arab background, but he makes movies
Yeah, I think he's
about
Algerian, French
Algerian.
Algerian.
Thanks, good. Yeah, so that's right. You're the MFA.
No,
So you went to school, and so of course I have to ask because there's the line in the famous song Chateau Lobby. You probably have been asked this many times, but he says you had to cheat your way through film school. And now what's funny is I have a friend who I mentioned that I'm talking to a UCLA MFA, and he got an MFA from some East Coast college. And he made like he's like, oh, if she has an MFA, anybody can get one. He was being self-deprecating, but I've been through school. It's very hard. I'm sure that was that an in joke.
I mean, it's yeah, that program is 4 years long. It's a 4-year MFA, and it's yeah. Fortunately, I met Josh in the second year of the program, which was less intensive, but I think that was sort of, yeah, a little joke about sort of trying to juggle both this like wonderful blossoming relationship and also be a TA in the undergrad
You gotta work.
and you know, staying up until 5 o'clock in the morning and then going to, you know, class at 7 o'clock in the morning and like just the absurdity of trying to do both things at once. You
Yeah,
know.
no, I mean, I've not been with Josh, but I've worked and gone to school and had relationships. It's a juggle, but I also know that it's a lot of work, a lot of work. Well, that's actually probably a good thing because you got a lot of your core out of the way, and then so I and I've been just my personal taste. I've been a fan of when he was his Jay Tillman moniker. I mean, not a super fan, but I appreciated it, and I liked the Fleet Foxes. I never thought, oh, that drummer is fucking awesome, but and so I've kind of followed him there. So when you married or when you met Josh, did that influence your last couple years in school, or did that kind of guide your eye towards what you wanted to do as far as filmmaking?
No, I mean we have very different aesthetics, but we trust each other's taste a lot. So I think that there wasn't so much of an influence as much as a gaining of a partner to always tell you when something's good or not, which I think is much more valuable in a lot of ways,
And
you know?
probably goes
Like
both ways,
influences
right?
come and go. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And that to me is just the most valuable thing I could have gained, you know, artistically from a relationship. Because I think that in the past I've written stories that I think, you know, either are just prose stories or I think, oh, that would make a good movie about experiences of relationships I've had with other people that influenced me, but those are so, they're almost a contained little world, you know, they exist over there. And with Josh, it's more vast than that. I'm not thinking about writing a story about him or about our experiences. It's more that it infuses everything that I do, you know, and we've just gained this partnership that is so, I don't know, so valuable to me, you
Kind
know.
of complements each other, would you say?
And our styles are so different, you know. I mean, I think I've become less, you know, romantic in a good way because of him, definitely, you know.
See, the weird thing is I know you from his lyrics, and I think I found that Pitchfork thing, and all you said was John Frusciante is a genius, which he is. But the
Oh
thing
yeah. Oh, I'm so glad that you think that as well.
he oh he is he, I think he's brilliant. I especially early Chili Peppers. That was a good answer. But the thing is, like in that thing, Josh talked 90% of the time. Now that might have been the way they edited it because they're Pitchfork and
Yeah,
they
of course.
but I was like, man, dude should let her talk more. She has some things. I mean, but
No, I remember that. I remember that interview and thinking Well, this isn't my, you know, this isn't my interview, so I'm just not gonna say very much, you know,
Oh, okay. Well,
just
that's
out of
fair too.
respect.
He is funny too. I
Yeah.
mean, it was a very funny interview, and I'm sure he's funny at home.
Yeah.
And he's on. I, by the way, I just saw him a couple weeks ago in Toronto. I guess more than a couple weeks ago, and
Oh
that was the show where Jenny Lewis joined him. And then I'm
yeah.
seeing him the week after
Yes.
next. So yeah, good. I'm sure
Oh,
he's.
right, and that's right. He's playing in Charlotte, is that right?
I'm seeing him in Charlotte. Yeah. So yeah.
Yeah.
Last time was my first time, and this will be my second. So just the timing worked out. But yeah, he was
Yeah,
amazing.
it's great.
He's fucking touring a long time though. Just looking at
Yeah,
the
he has.
dates. So and
Oh, yeah.
do you, I'm sure you guys have your own projects, and obviously you probably, four-month tour or something. You probably don't see much of each other. So is this when you focus on your art mostly?
Yeah, I think it's in a way, I mean, we really, when we're home, we spend all day together, you know.
Well,
We
that's
hang out
good.
all the time. Yeah, and that's like such a luxury, you know, 'cause I think most couples don't have that opportunity. And so when he's away, we have a really good rhythm now, you know,
That's
where
good.
we talk, you know, a couple of times a day, and it's really a good thing because I get time to be by myself, you know, which is very valuable to me.
I'm in a very healthy marriage, and I think time to yourself is huge, and my wife thinks that as well.
Yeah.
And in fact,
Oh, it's so lucky.
well, 4 months might be a challenge, but
Yeah.
like for in fact, I thought, knowing this was coming up, I thought about the line, "We hate the same things," or, and I thought of applying that to my own marriage. Of course, you can't hate every single thing the same. Or I think that's actually he means that in a very romantic way. But last night,
Yes.
we tried watching a movie that I wasn't into, and my wife loved, and so I went upstairs and watched a movie I love that she hates, which was a Tree of Life, which she doesn't. That's too indulgent for her. So anyway,
What film was it?
I watched Tree of Life, and she watched
Oh.
King of Hearts, which is a 70s
Oh.
Philip Denoyce or
Okay.
DeBrocca. Yeah, it's a co
Okay.
70s comedy's tough. And
Okay.
so
It's a lot of different references.
yeah, do you have any like I know you mentioned you weren't a film person going in, but I'm sure you were exposed to a lot. So did any gravitate toward or any drive you there?
Filmmakers
Filmmakers, yeah.
or films in particular. Yeah, I mean, I mean, you know, the one we mentioned is probably at the top of the list, Tony Gatliff, but Lucrezia Martel is one
Oh,
of my favorite
nice.
filmmakers.
I just watched
Yeah.
Zama a couple weeks ago.
I haven't seen it yet.
It's different for her.
Yeah, it seems like it.
I
I have
have.
an Argentinian friend who worked on the film, and he was like, "You're not going to believe this movie."
It's yeah. I won't say anything, but because yeah, you'll. It's well produced. I think of her as like an indie Argentinian director. That very art house. And this is
Yeah.
sort of that, but it's also sort of biopic. But
Yeah.
yeah, very well. Looks great. I like.
Yeah.
I haven't seen The Headless Woman, but what's there's.
Oh, it's beautiful.
I need to see it. There's the one with
Yeah.
the chairs where they. In the swimming pool, it was La Cienega is
Yeah, La Cienega. Yep.
Not exactly
Yeah.
pleasant. So you like
No,
depressing movies? Is
disturbing.
that?
Yeah. I do. I mean, like, I mean, you know, Tarkovsky obviously is a favorite, but I also love I really love like most Spanish language filmmakers, you know, are just that my absolute favorites, you
So
know.
the
I'm really
obvious
looking
one
forward to
is,
seeing.
sorry, that's what the overlap. So well,
No, that's all right.
you'd mentioned that you liked risque, or you watched a lot of risque movies in the 90s. When I think of those foreign films, Almodovar often comes to mind. So is that somebody
Yeah.
that? Okay.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, he's like I can he's the he's one of the filmmakers where I can watch his films any day of the week over and over and over again. I could watch one and start it over again and watch it, you know?
Yeah, we're
I love him.
yeah, he came out with so as you know, this is a podcast about the Criterion Collection, and it was a year or two ago
Yeah.
they came out with Tie Me Up, Tie Me Down. So that's when I
Yeah.
great actor, and also the just the little bit of sensuality as well. But so and then
Yeah, he's the best.
and so you graduated from UCLA, and so you and I know you made a couple films. Well, and we talked about The History of Caves. I actually watched that today. So was that? And I know that Josh did the score. And I was actually surprised to hear Hollywood and Babylon. And I'm writing a novel during the sex scenes. So my take was
Yeah.
everybody should have, if you're in the mood, put on a Misty record. I'm sure that's what you were going for. Sorry. So how did you get into obviously you know I well I guess back up just a little bit. So Josh kind of changed his I guess persona, I guess you'd say. He became this character and kind of not kind of himself too, but I guess were you there for that transformation? Was that when you were in film school?
Yes, well, I think he would disagree with you about that, about the becoming a different persona. But I think that when we met, he was still in Sleep Foxes, and he had when we met, he had made the record, the Fear Fun record, his first record, but he hadn't released it yet, and it was maybe 8 months into our relationship when he released that record. So when we met, he lived in Laurel Canyon. He was living with roommates, and he was in the band, the other band, and he toured, was touring in the band, and so I listened to the record. He played it for me, maybe like a month after we had been dating, and I thought it was so beautiful and so different and so interesting, but I also loved his other music that he made. As you were saying, you're a fan. I am as well.
Okay.
After listening to it, but I didn't know him or anything about him before we met. But he played, he played me some things of his old records, and I thought it was so beautiful also. And so I think that in a way there was a transformation of self, but I think that came, naturally in the way that all people have to shed their, the skin of their youth and become what they're going to become. And I think that all artists have that drive and urge, but I think all people do, whether or not they're frustrated and aren't allowed to grow and change, or whether they do, So I see it more just as a natural progression of his life as an artist, and kind of moving into what he felt more expressed, what he wanted to say, and how to do that in a relevant way, which I've thought about a lot as an artist as well. Because when I was young, or when I was in, undergraduate, I wrote stories that were very specific to what I thought was interesting, which I had grown up reading all these classic books, like The Scarlet Letter and Little Women, and I thought that was interesting, and like that was interesting to me, but it wasn't interesting to very many other people, and so I think that you had like all artists struggle with, trying to bridge that gap between your private little world that you've created and then breaking into something that you can actually touch other people with. And I feel very like he did that so successfully.
Yeah, that's interesting. So, well, as a fan, I knew him during Fleet Foxes and his solo. I think it was during that time he was releasing solo records. And then, and actually, I'm into music. I'm sure you are too. But I didn't realize that I'd heard about this Father John Misty guy. I didn't realize it was the same person for a little while. So
Oh, amazing.
I had to catch up. But But yeah, anyway, my wife's an English professor and she hates Little Women. So,
Oh,
but
that's great.
her peers like it though. So,
I haven't read it in a long time. I read it a few times when I was 9 years old, so
yeah, some things
I
when you're
wonder if it would hold up.
some things when you're nine don't hold up when you're when you grow up, and you,
Yes.
especially when you get a film degree. So, well, then I guess
Yeah.
I guess is that the about the time you were making History of Caves, or was that
Yeah, I think I made that film. Let's see, I think we met in 2011, I think, in like September of 2011, and then I made The History of Caves in March of 2012, and then his record came out in May of 2012.
Oh, Fear Fun, right? So
Yeah.
that was
Which
kind
is
of.
why we included those songs in the film, because it was before the record even came out. Now it's like, oh right, you're just putting like a record that people love like in the movie. But
Right.
at the time it was just this thing that was like very private.
Okay. And so, not like today where you drop a YouTube. So, well,
Yeah.
but I noticed it was produced by, or I guess released or distributed by Sub Pop. And I looked around. You can find it on iTunes, but did it? And it's a short, about 30 minutes. Did it actually
Yeah.
screen anywhere, or any festivals or anything?
No, because when I went to film school, the first and last thing that was said to us every single day of our lives in film school was, don't make a movie longer than 10 minutes because it'll never get into any film festivals. So what did I
Really?
do?
To 30, yeah.
I made a 30-minute long film that can't possibly be programmed anywhere.
I was
So
thinking about,
no.
because there's a lot of short feature things, and the usually 10, 12, maybe 15 minutes max is usually the way that
Yes.
works. So so that
Yep.
was your student film then? Was that like
Yeah, it was my thesis film.
your thesis film? Okay. I
Yeah.
enjoyed it quite a bit. I
Oh,
noticed,
really?
yeah, I there were a couple of shots. I noticed a really cool underwater shot. And I'm sure you shot this all digitally, right?
Yes. Yeah, we did.
See, it's a short film. I almost feel like giving away just the premise would spoil it. Not that really.
No, feel free.
But it's about a guy who has kids and a relationship, and a Misty record, and fixes watches, and then there. Have you seen? This might be a spoiler for another movie, but have you seen Hereditary?
I haven't, no.
Okay, well, I won't say anything, but this I just saw that a couple weeks ago, and this film,
Yeah.
with what the kids were doing, reminded me of that film. So I'll shut up about
Oh,
that.
wow.
But
Okay.
I thought it was good. Yeah. So,
Thank you. I appreciate that because
did
it was, the first thing I really had ever made, pretty much. Yeah.
And did you get, what was your grade? Did you get an A for it?
I think I did. I think I did. Yes. I can't really remember. I feel grateful. In a lot of ways, it's probably as good as it is for having been shot by Christopher Blauvelt, who is a really incredible cinematographer. And he shoots all of Kelly Reichardt's films, and he
Really?
just, yeah.
I watched Wendy and Lucy last night.
He does all of her films, and he also just shot, or he, not just, but don't worry, he won't get far on foot. And
Oh, right.
he's incredible. He's an incredibly kind person, and he brought his whole crew to work for free. So we had a very professional, well-oiled machine on set that was, I'm so grateful that we had that. But because when you're working with children for
Right, right,
the first
right.
time and non-actors, everyone in the movie is a non-actor,
Sure.
and it was like could have been major chaos, but it was still more controlled, I think, for having Chris on board.
The kids were pretty good, though, I thought. Now,
They were so good.
were these other
They were
students?
so good.
Not the kids, of course. I'm sure they were students somewhere, but the adults, were they students that you knew, or?
They were the man who plays the father, the single father in the film. He was one of my best friends at the time,
Okay.
and he's a filmmaker himself. Actually, he's making a feature film right now,
Oh,
and
cool.
he's a kind of a legendary skateboard filmmaker, who made these skate videos in the 90s and 2000s that are, if you ask anyone in the skate community, they're pretty cool.
Really? Okay.
And yeah, and he was my really good friend, and I just think he has that face, that movie star kind of face. So we worked on the film together, and then the other women in the film were people I knew. One, the girl in the sex scene at the beginning, is a girl who worked in a clothing store, and I accosted her in the dressing room and asked if she'd ever acted before because I love the way she looked. And then she got into, said yes and did the film. So, it was just like very, like easygoing in that way.
Cool. And
Yeah.
of course, I think of again tying it to lyrics. I think of From the Cave to the City to a Permanent Party. The title, The History of Caves. So I guess I can kind of see it. But was there any correlation there between what your husband did a couple years later?
No, that title came from just a place of, the mystery of the heart, really.
Okay,
That's what that title means to me. Yeah.
the cavernous heart.
Yeah, and the blackness, the darkness that's in there too, the unknowable part of the heart,
Yeah, and somewhat irresponsible too. I think that's kind of the point. And so I know you have another project in the works called The Wheel. Is that right? And is this a feature or is this what is The Wheel?
It's another short film that I wrote this year, actually, and we shot it out in the desert, and we're submitting it to film festivals and things now. But it's much shorter,
Oh,
and
yeah, he
it
learned.
has, yes, I learned my lesson. I learned my lesson, especially after writing a couple of scripts and not, getting some traction, but not, people don't want to take a chance on someone they don't know anything about.
Well, I think you have some work out there. Now, at some point, would you like to do a feature film? Is that your goal? Or I know you have a number of
Yes.
other projects that we'll get into.
Yes. Yes. I when I graduated from school, from the master's program, I wrote a film that's set in New Orleans and is a film that's really dear to my heart that I tried to get made for a couple of years and kind of put it on the shelf for a while because it's a pretty fairly provocative subject matter, and I didn't know if people were actually interested in it and whether or not they really wanted to see that movie. And honestly, especially now with everything that's going on in our country and in the world, there is a desire to make something that has more resonance,
I am all on
so
board
that
for a provocative modern resonance that'll shake things up.
I hope so. I have a couple of films I've written. I have three.
Okay.
So we'll see. Feature length films.
Is
Yeah. We'll see what happens.
so of course, and again, lyrics. So the perfect script, is that one of those? You left a
Oh, I
note and
think
you're
in that. Oh, y yes. I think in reference to my handwriting, actually.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Real Violence. Well, was that another project?
Yeah, that was with so my best friend in graduate school and still a very dear friend, Jonathan King. That was his film, and I introduced him to the actors in that film, and was the kind of producer, AD, everything on that film, and it was another short film, but he. that's a you know, he made something really amazing that was really dear to his heart. But I was more of a producer and kind of like helped shape the creation of it.
So behind the lens, so yeah, that's good experience too. Just to, I mean, obviously you've done a little directing, but just to kind of see, we have a good friend here that does gaffing. So you know, it's a big crew for this little, you know, 10 to 90 minute movie that you're eventually going to see. So then, and I guess probably Josh's career has helped you play around. So you've done a couple of music videos. So you did, well, most recently you did God's Favorite Customer, which is, looks like handheld. I don't know if you were holding the camera or not, but Josh.
No.
I didn't think so. But Josh is walking around. It looks like East Village area. Maybe West Village. Just walking around. Yes. Who hasn't walked around at night looking forlorn and singing song lyrics in New York?
It's true, right?
Yeah, sure. Was that your idea or was that?
It was our idea together, I think. and it was the original idea was that he would be carrying a giant bouquet of roses, like a burdensome bouquet of roses, like 200 red roses, you know, long stemmed red roses. And then it evolved. But yeah, it was our idea together. And that, I would say that video is the one that I feel like I properly directed that. Conceptualized it. Okay. Yeah. The other ones are more, you know, like a little, you know, you can tell.
Yeah. Well, and there's also, and right. And the other ones he's had made are, you know, the animated, I'm sure that's probably pretty cumbersome or pretty, take time consuming, I think it's a great video. It's a good song, and I like the touch that he's just kind of walking, and then at times he sing, or I don't know, sing, talk, you know, at times he voices the lyrics, at times he doesn't. It's good stuff. Do you plan to do more of his? I know the album's been out a little bit. If it comes up, you will.
Yeah, I think it's more if it comes up, you know. I mean, I think that it has to be a good idea, you know. It's a little bit like why I resisted making another short film for so long, and I was trying to focus on these features because I didn't have a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be natural, you know.
Yeah, like hang out at the gallows. You can do it at the gallows. That's a terrible idea.
You can get really literal with it. Yeah.
No, that song, you can, speaking of modern times, I think you could talk about like media and how it influences people. So.
Oh, absolutely. We were just watching a Sean Parker interview where he was talking about how, you know, that all of this. It's just terrible for society. He wishes it would all go away.
Sometimes I do too. And sometimes it's good. You know, I know that we're dealing with hurricane here, and actually, as we're talking, we're in the eye of a hurricane, which is kind of crazy.
It's
now a storm. Yeah, because it didn't seem like this might happen, but fortunately, it's a 2-mile-per-hour storm. But yeah, I think social media has its benefits, but it has a dark side as well. So, what's your politics? What's your religion? What's your reason for being? Would you say that the videos give you practice, kind of? You're kind of learning from this?
Yes, definitely. Definitely.
Well, the other...
Hard work.
Yeah. It's probably a lot harder than, it's not just, okay, Josh, walk down this avenue. I didn't see a lot of cuts in that film either.
One hidden cut.
Really? Okay. Very nice. Very nice, Emma Elizabeth. Good job.
Thank you.
No, it really is a remarkable video. Good song too. He played that.
Thank you.
I know he doesn't play that live all the time, but he played that at Toronto, and Jenny joined him for the girl part, which was
beautiful.
Nice moment. And then
yeah.
You also direct. I'm sorry.
No, I was just saying it's a very melancholy song. Those are my favorites.
Yeah, as he has great banter as it shows, and before he played it, he said, "Here, I have another mid-tempo song for you all to."
Right.
So, yeah,
Sounds about right.
it is. Yeah, there's a few of those, but not mid-tempo. You also directed Chateau Lobby Number 4, which is the aforementioned song that actually has your name. Your name be do you eat bread and butter?
Yes.
So you just mentioned that God's Favorite Customer was the one you felt was your own. So I know you directed this, but you feel that this was more of a collaboration?
Yeah, that one I mean it was we shot it I think on like a phone or an iPad or something, and it was the day of our I think our wedding anniversary, and we were staying in
Oh.
the hotel, and yeah, it was like very, very casual. I think we ordered breakfast, we shot a little bit during breakfast, we went outside. I mean, it's like you can't really consider that video a proper directorial endeavor.
And you had a filter on there, a kind of a kaleidoscope. It was interesting, but I could tell that there was a couple of moments like are really, really visually stunning, I think. So you
Hard
did
for you to say.
the filter on the phone or the iPad or whatever?
No, that was there's if you live in Los Angeles and you belong to a certain scene of people, you will know that there is a tiny company run by a single man, and it is called Future Eyes, and they are glasses that have kaleidoscope lenses. They're like glass kaleidoscope lenses, and they are meant for psychedelic purposes. And we had a pair of the glasses that were given to us by the man who makes them or someone else that we know. And so we like popped one of the lenses out and we used that. So there you go. Now you know.
That is so cool. I can't talk about my own history, but I'm reading the book, the Michael Pollan book about psychedelics and the science and
Oh
everything. It's really good, but it's not what you'd expect.
That's wonderful. I just saw that in the bookstore the other day and thought to myself, oh, that sounds interesting. I'd like to read that.
It is, but it's not like it's more scientific than you expect. So I don't know if you it's more nonfiction-y, but I think it's fascinating. Just the whole culture, and as you mentioned, the scene, the certain scene that you can be part of. So I think of Chateau Lobby as like the most weirdly romantic song alive. So I think the video captures that, and I think the casualness and the psychedelic, Satanic Christmas Eve. I think totally works. And then you, of course, you were an actress for Nancy From Now On, which is where you're a dominatrix that ends up shaving somebody, which is that has to is that a fetish in L.A.?
That's a very natural role for me.
But you played it
I
with
don't.
relish.
Yes, I did. I did. I loved being in that video.
I'm sure you loved having your foot on his head too.
Of course.
So how did that come about?
That video was directed by our friend Amy Scott, who actually, we just went to the premiere of her film last night, which is the official Hal Ashby documentary, which was
Oh yes.
so interesting. It was so good. Have you heard about him?
Yeah. Oh, about Hal Ashby. Yeah, very much. And I think
Well, of course,
Oscilloscope is coming out with that.
yes,
And I have a
exactly.
relationship with them a little bit. So that's yeah, I can't wait for
Oh,
that.
amazing. Yeah, it's really it's the documentary. I mean, it's a you know, it's a it it's laid out in a very easy to follow, easy to understand way, but it mostly talks about his, making of 9 films in 7 years in the 70s, or 7 films in 9 years in the 70s, and just talking about all of those films and what they mean, and it was so beautiful.
I enjoyed thinking about him in that way, because they mention it in the film, but he is a little bit underrepresented mm-hmm. in terms of what he contributed, you know, to cinema and being an auteur in an era where all of those guys were sort of inventing that genre of filmmaking. And he's kind of like an outlier in that, I guess, because he didn't write his own films. He worked with Robert Jones, you know, but his vision is like completely that of an auteur. So
yeah, we've talked about him a few times. I think he, of the new American or American new wave is, I guess, what they call it, a new American cinema.
Yeah.
It's Scorsese and Altman and them that kind of get, and Coppola mm-hmm. even, that get the credits. But yeah, I think a lot of the stuff he was doing, like more like The Last Detail, and then mm-hmm. and then later Being There is one of the best cultural commentaries. And guess mm-hmm. what? It still holds up. Sadly.
Oh, absolutely.
Sadly.
It's just like Network, you know?
Yeah,
you
yeah.
watch Network and you're like, oh my gosh.
I know.
It's like, you, I thought I got rid of you.
Yeah, no, yeah. Yeah, about that. So yeah, I can't wait to see that. And I love Ashby. He, of course, Harold and Maude too. So speaking of like...
Oh, yeah.
Kind of dark. And then, you know, we talk about Criterion. They're coming out with Shampoo yeah. in a few months. And I actually haven't seen that.
Oh.
So I've been waiting.
I haven't either.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see the Ashby movie. Big fan.
Yeah.
So then, I know you do a lot of photography work. And this is where I'm pretty much a neophyte. I mean, I think... I know yeah. more about photography from directors that have taken it up that I like Wenders, for example, mm-hmm. Wim Wenders. I mean, he's done some documentaries, but I think mostly he's a photographer and mm-hmm. others. So you mentioned you came into film school with that, but how does that, and of course you have an Instagram and I noticed Josh is in a lot of your pictures and has some models, but how does this work?
Well, I think my mom had a 35mm camera when I was a kid, and I took a photography class when I was 14, where we learned to print in the darkroom, and I really fell in love with it then. And I took a lot of pictures when I was a teenager with this camera, and then I stopped for a couple of years, you know, and then I took a trip with my then boyfriend to France, and we were living in France.
Oh, wow.
In a really rural part of France, in Brittany, actually, by the ocean.
Wow.
And he had given me, before we left on the trip, he'd given me his grandmother's camera. So I took pictures with the camera when we were there, and it like flooded me, but I was 21 or something and hadn't taken pictures in 4 years, which, you know, when you're that age, it feels like a lifetime. And I remembered how much I loved it. And I took all these pictures and we were there for a couple of months. And when I came back, I had them all developed, and just that thrill of not knowing what you're going to get, you know, was so addictive. And I still have that addictive thing. And that was it, basically. And I think because I had that experience of living in France was so so profound to me in my life then and for so many years after that, because it was very difficult and it was very rich and I felt very lonely and isolated, but at the same time was like thrilled by the experiences that I was having, and later look back on it with so much like richness and nostalgia. And the fact that I had taken the pictures of what I was experiencing and then able to have them forever was so profound to me that I just after that just took pictures of my life, you know, pretty much all the time. And Josh and I met, I took pictures of him maybe like the second or third time that we ever spent an afternoon together, spent time together. And so that was always part of our life. And I feel really lucky that I have those pictures from like our relationship, you know. And that's mostly why I take pictures.
Just,
you know, there's this, yeah, to have something, you know, and it's interesting because Nan Golden has this quote that she says, you know, I always took pictures to hold on to the things in my life, but when I look at them, I realize how much I've lost. And there is that, you know, there's like, there's a sadness to that. And you see how your life has changed and these memories that have gone by. And as an artist, I've always been interested in memory and how people remember things and how differently people remember certain events. And the fact that when you take a photograph of someone, the way you feel about them comes out on film, and the way that they feel yeah. about you is so obvious. And those things can be, you could, you know, have two people take the same picture of a person and it's just completely different. And it's so, to me, that the medium is so mercurial and magical and strange for that reason. And so I just come back to it again and again. It just never ceases to amaze me or feel interesting or beautiful to me, you know?
Yeah, and I'm just kind of scrolling through your pictures here, and I see that you did some in Jamaica.
Yeah.
So, do you? Obviously, yeah. It's an art. It's also a part of your life and an experience, capturing those experiences. But do you like, you know, go on adventures for the purpose of photography, or is it more just you're there, it happens, that sort of thing?
You know, it's always been the latter for the most part. I've never sought out a location or a person or an experience to photograph. And usually when I do seek out a person or when a person asks me to take pictures of them and I do it, it's just the pictures are so terrible and they don't have life and they don't feel good, you know. But as I get a little older, I've been less interested in taking pictures of people and more interested in taking pictures of places
mm-hmm.
and mostly in interiors, houses that have a lot of character and have a lot of mystery. And so as I get a little older, I actually have thought about taking a trip to a place, you know, specifically to photograph it, because I think that seems more interesting to me now. Mm. You know, I think as, you know, taking pictures and publicizing them of my relationship with my husband has become less appealing to me
mm-hmm.
Because it feels that it's an intrusion of privacy now.
Yeah,
I don't know, really know why.
I can totally see that. Or promotional pictures mm-hmm. kind of. And I think sometimes they are kind of...
Yeah.
Yeah, I just see the one. And by the way, listeners, they're not always safe for work. Just saying.
True.
But like there's one in. It looks like this is in London of him pouring coffee. So, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. There's some that are less. I'll still put pictures. That's an old one that I, you know, like brought out or whatever. But the pictures that I take now, it's like it's just. Just private, mostly, you know,
okay.
Maybe like a portrait out somewhere, but, or yeah, or for his record, you know, I took the last pictures for his record, but that's a bit different. That's like,
oh, so,
know,
so that's,
it's for work,
right.
You know,
yeah, but
the
you're
ones
not,
that
you're...
are really intimate just don't, oh no, I was just going to say the ones that are really intimate don't, it just, I don't want to do that anymore.
That's
you know?
Fair. Well, I saw you have mm-hmm. a residency coming up. So is this for your photography, how does that
yeah.
work?
Yeah, I'm going to a residency in Mexico City, and it is actually research for a film that I'd like to make there.
Very cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll be there for 3 weeks.
Very cool. Well, as I happen to know that your husband will be, I'll be seeing him in while you're there, I guess. So.
That's right. Yeah, it's good to coordinate these things so that you're not away from. Your loved one at different times.
That's right. That's right. Does he ever come with you to these things, or, I mean, obviously he has his work too in his career.
Yeah. Yeah. I usually choose, if I'm going to be away, I usually choose a time that he's, you know, working so
sure.
that when we're home, we can actually just be home together.
And do you ever go with him on, that doesn't sound fun.
I used to go a lot. And it is, you know, it's it's like time is suspended, you know. There's no future, there's no past, it's just the present of being either in a bus or you know, we used to go in a van, and you know, you're at the show, you're at the venue all day, and then they play the show. And I think that, you know, if you have the reward, the artistic reward of playing music for people, then it's worth it. You know, all of that sort of like dreamlike day that just elapses, you know, is kind of worth it. But it's a little harder when you don't have that reward, you know.
Yeah, being somebody that loves music but knows about music also and knows about how the grind, you know, I appreciate him going out for us, but I do look at tour dates and I think, oh man, they're fucking tired. And I actually thought about that about your husband. So hopefully he'll but he seems like a gamer, so I think he'll be fine.
He's strong. He's strong.
He's tough. So then, all right, well, of course, we're kind of ending on this, but as I mentioned, we're a Criterion podcast, so this is a little bit of a departure from what we usually do, but I just really wanted to talk to you. So, and I don't know if you are into physical, digital media at all, or I know you watch a lot of movies. You live in L.A., so you have access to a lot of great screenings, but do you keep up with with, like, the restorations, or do you buy media, or rent it online, or how do you consume?
Yes, I used to go to Cinephile in LA, which I feel like now is the last proper, like, you know, video store in LA that has all the everything, you know, has all the Criterion collection, it has every obscure film that you're looking for and all that, but I don't go there as much now because I live quite far away from there. But I also have a pretty good DVD collection, although I don't buy DVDs as much anymore because we have a projector with a projector screen.
Ooh.
And and it's over our bed and it's changed my life.
That is,
it's
fucking
like watching
fancy.
A movie
That's
in
awesome.
A theater. Yes, it was my birthday present.
That's
from Josh last year, and it's really incredible to watch the movies with the projector. So I do that mostly, which means that I watch movies from Filmstruck, and that's my main source.
Cool.
Yeah.
We talk about Filmstruck a lot, so.
That's nice.
So you and Josh
sit
in the bed, eat crackers, and watch Stalker? Is that what happens?
You nailed it. You've nailed it.
There you go. All right. It sounds like a lovely marriage. And hating the same things would be like Jurassic Park and everything that's coming out now.
Yeah. Sometimes, you know, Josh will introduce me to, you know, an 80s, 90s movie that I really should have seen, you know.
I'm floored. It's like cinephile heaven. That's very, very cool. Kudos to your husband. Let's see. We just had Cold Water come out by Olivier Assayas. That was probably about the time you were growing up, but I don't know if that was available here. And then Tree of Life came out. A Matter of Life and Death, Sex, Lies, and Videotape. That was probably one that was during your formative years.
Oh, yeah. That's one of the ones we watched in the, like, yeah, with my friend who we were allowed to watch any movie we wanted. Yeah.
Oh, okay, that was one of the taboo. I know it has the title Sex, Lies, and Videotape, but it's a different perspective on that, I think.
Definitely, yeah. I think I was disappointed when I was 12 years old, but now it's...
I can see that.
Now it makes a lot more sense.
All right, this is... What the fuck? This is just weird.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you get into, like, classic Hollywood films at all, or are you? Is it mostly art house foreign, kind of like the...
Yeah, mostly art house foreign. I think someday I'll get to the Hollywood classics. My parents watch a lot of those films, and I watched a lot of them when I was really young, but I feel like I need to, you know, would need to see them again as an adult. But mostly the weird stuff, mostly the really weird stuff.
Right on. I'm into the weird stuff. So the big thing this year is the Bergman box set. Are you a Bergman fan, or is
Yes.
Yeah, we had
very
the
much so.
luxury of seeing Persona here locally in our little southeastern town,
Oh.
which was pretty amazing. But yeah, we're really looking forward to
Oh.
that. So, with your little projector bedroom ordeal, so you have to do prints then, right? Or is it DCP?
Yeah.
Wow. All right, I need to
Yeah,
marry.
it's really cool. Yeah.
I need to marry a rock star. Sorry, hope my wife's not listening.
But she might.
We do fine. We're about looking for a
I'm
house,
sure.
so that's one thing we can maybe look into. The thing is, like I mentioned,
Yeah.
she can't do the Tarkovsky, Malick. She doesn't like the slow, methodical stuff, which sounds like
Yeah.
that's more your speed.
Yeah.
Let's see, what else is coming out? And Magnificent Ambersons is classic, Orson Welles, and then Shampoo Sisters. You like any old horror?
You know, I can't watch horror films.
Really?
I never have been able to.
Okay. Well.
My imagination is too active.
There. Well, then, in that case, don't watch Hereditary. When I mentioned it earlier,
Okay.
that one will fuck you up.
Okay. I probably won't.
It's really scary. And nowadays, you like very few films are scary. Like if you don't watch
I was
horror
going to
films.
say that's a hard shoe to fill. To be actually scary.
Yeah, and then next week is My Man Godfrey. So if you don't do classic film but you like comedy, I'd recommend that one if
Yeah.
you're into it. And then they have like The Princess Bride, True Stories. You like David Byrne?
Yes.
Yeah, we got to
Yeah, that'll be great.
see him a few months back, and he is fantastic.
Yeah, he really is, isn't he?
Yeah, anything else on your horizon film-wise that you would recommend or?
I just watched El Sur, which I thought was really beautiful. That was the I think it was one that had just come out,
Yeah,
Spanish film by
Eriche. I fucked his name up so many times, but I think it's Eriche.
Yes.
Have you seen
Spirit of the Beehive.
Yeah. Speaking of children and film, that's some good ones. So did you like it?
Oh yeah. I thought it was so beautiful, yeah. Yeah, because there's that, it's that thing of the mystery of childhood, you know, it's just kind of what I was trying to call out in my, you know, in the history of caves was like where reality is not fixed, you know? I love that.
Yeah, and I think even though I think probably most of history of caves is the adults, you see that through the lens of the children. I don't know if you've seen the Florida Project, but I think that's one of the best uses of children in the past year. Have you seen that?
I haven't, but I'm a huge Willem Dafoe fan. I'm really looking forward to Julian Schnabel's new film with Willem Dafoe playing Vincent Van Gogh.
I am too. I'm interested. I think Van Gogh's fascinating. I watched who did that Van Gogh biopic? Not the
Oh
American.
yeah, Loving Vincent. Is that
Oh,
the one?
that was good. I'm thinking of an older
Or
one,
is it?
a foreign one that was really really good. Anyway, I can't. It's not coming to mind.
Yeah. But I think they had a really that Julian Schnabel film. I think I have a feeling it's going to be really good.
So Julian Schnabel's an interesting guy because he is a artist, you know, true artist, painter that has made some. He's a painter first, or artist first, filmmaker second. So is that kind of what you aspire to be? Photographer first,
Yes.
filmmaker
Yeah.
second.
He's always inspired me. I mean, really, like since I was probably a teenager and I was introduced to his work by someone that was friends with his assistant. And so they had all these Julian Schnabel stories and whatever. And I just thought, oh, he's an interesting, he's the guy, you know, he's the guy. And he's always been for me, you know. He's a really fascinating man. I think he's brilliant.
Yeah, he's and what I like about him is that even though he's doing I shouldn't say Hollywood, but he's doing big films. He's doing them on his terms, and they're for the most part. I mean, I think he started out with the Cuban Before Night Falls, which was fantastic, and then of course,
yeah,
Diving Bell, and he's doing very well.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, and he still paints.
Which is
Yeah, I know
amazing.
that, which is awesome too. Yeah, and I think probably like you, probably one discipline informs the other. So,
Yeah.
all right. Well, Emma, where can people find you on the internet?
I just built my own new website the other day because mine was such a piece of shit. So I made a new one.
Where's that one at?
And it's just EmmaElizabethTillman.com. And it will hopefully update it frequently. But mostly it's just I have my Instagram is just only my film photographs and news about my, work and things like that. So if people want to see the work, then that's probably the easiest place to go. That will lead you to all the other little places
The
and
Instagram, that is.
that's right.
Okay. And sometimes it seems like there's a little more casual shots there. I'm sure you've cheated with iPhones a couple times, yeah?
I have not, never.
Oh, good for you. Okay. Well,
They're all film photographs.
good for you. Yeah, that's one thing. I mean, of course I have an iPhone. Everybody has an iPhone. I know you do because it was in a song lyric, but but like, yeah, speaking of going to shows, seeing everybody with their phones out must drive your husband nuts. But he seems pretty chill about
I think he's come to peace. Come to his has a sense of peace about it now.
I think you have to. There was a thing with Jack Black a couple months ago where he was banning iPhones from his shows, which I kind of get, but it's also like, well, what if shit happens? What if you get lost? And
You can never go back in time.
yeah, exactly. We can't make a you can't go to 1995 and have a concert. Although
No,
those were some fun
no.
concerts.
I was going to say, as much as we wish we could.
Anywhere else on the internet besides Instagram and your website? Twitter or
I don't think
anything? I know
so.
you're not, it sounds like
No,
you're down on social media.
no. Yeah, I am. Yeah, for the most part. No, I don't have a Facebook or Twitter or anything like that. But I'm sure there's if you just do a Google search, you could probably find everything you'd want to know. Just ask Google.
Google Emma, you'll find it. All right, well, you can find us at Criterion Cast, probably the master feed, and I'm on Twitter, AWES505, but I really don't use it these days. I think I posted a couple hurricane-related things lately, but if anybody's wondering, I'm safe. It's all good.
So happy to hear it.
Me too. I'm now eating Oreos because I stocked up on, we thought the power was going to go out, so we have like a whole cupboard of hurricane food. So.
Oh, that's so fun.
What is I was gonna relate it to the song lyric again. Things I wish I knew before the hurricane. So great talking to you, Emma, and have a good wedding, not your own. Enjoy your trip to Mexico.
Thank you so much, Aaron. Really appreciate it.